We welcome you to another live edition of the Sports Box, brought to you by our sponsor, Showcase Sports in Hamilton. Showcase Sports for the elite athlete. And by our friends over at CrowdPlay. Download the free CrowdPlay app today and check them out at www.crowdplayapp.com for details. Ladies and gentlemen, it's showtime.
Hey everybody, welcome to a special edition of Cage My IQ. I am your host, D-Bake, joined by my co-host, Jim. And we got a wonderful guest today, and this is UFC middleweight contender, Eric Anders. How's it going?
Hey, what's going on, fellas, man? Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us today. As you know, he fought last week in a controversial no contest. But today we're having him on so we can learn a little bit about him, how he got started from NFL. He did football and then transitioned over to MMA and just learn a little bit about him. So first off, we just want to welcome you. He's 13-5-1 with the one no contest in his career. And then
11 no contest?
Ooh. One no contest.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that would be crazy if it was 11. But the first thing I just wanted to ask you was, how was it like being the son of a military mom growing up?
Man, you know, it's had its ups and downs, you know. We moved about every 3 years, so it was really difficult to, like, develop long-lasting friendships and stuff. But, you know, in retrospect, as an adult, you know, I thoroughly appreciate it because, man, we lived overseas. We lived in different countries. We moved all around the United States. So, man, I think my perspective on, you know, I think, like, when you're young, you're growing up, you're absorbing all these different cultures and ways of life and things like that. I think it's just so beneficial to, you know, a young developing mind that, you know, it's something that I try to do for my kids now. You know, obviously we're stationary. We don't move. But, you know, I try to, you know, take them overseas and show them the world and different cultures, languages and customs and things like that, different foods. And, you know, just kind of broaden your horizons and, you know, enhance your perspective on life and, you know, other people's ways of life.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Like I read that you were stationed in the Philippines. Where else were you stationed at overseas?
We lived in the Philippines and in Japan.
Oh, nice.
But, you know, we my mom, you know, she would just hop on like these military hops, these C-130s, you know, with cargo net seats. And, you know, you have to wear the earplugs because it's so loud. And, you know, we'd be on, you know, these planes with a bunch of other like active duty military people. And like, they call it a hop. And we get these hops over to Korea and, you know, these other countries and stuff like that. So, you know, it is, you know, super cool to be able to do that. Now, a lot of people, you know, when I played ball in college, there were a lot of people who hadn't been out of their hometown. And to me, that was just so foreign. And, you know, to me, that was crazy. But, you know, they were looking at me like I was crazy, you know, being, you know, moving around and being in a bunch of different places.
How was it living abroad? Like, did you enjoy it, or was it like a little bit harder for you?
You know, I thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, I thought it was pretty cool to, you know, one day move from Japan, from Albuquerque, New Mexico, catch an 18-hour flight, you know, to Okinawa, Japan, and get dropped off in you know, the middle of Japan. And man, luckily for me, you know, I got three other brothers, so, you know, I always had somebody to, like, you know, go out and discover and get into mischief with. So, like, if I was an only child, I probably wouldn't enjoy it as much. But fortunately for me, you know, I had a bunch of other, you know, brothers that were kind of into the same stuff that I was. And, you know, that's just kind of the way we grew up, where we didn't have much say about it.
Now, I wouldn't say was it a culture shock, but how was it to live abroad and then all of a sudden come back to Texas to go to high school?
Yeah. Well, like I said, we moved about every 3 years. So, like, I was born in the Philippines. Then we moved to New Mexico. We moved when I was, like, two or so. And then we lived in New Mexico till I was, like, you know, five or six, or, you know, maybe even seven. Then we moved to Japan for 3 years, then to Maryland. No, to Alabama for, like, 9 months, then to Maryland. Then finally finished off in Texas. And, you know, even just moving from, like, state to state, you know, it's, you know, obviously it's still in America, but, man, people do things differently. The food is different. You know, from the South to the Southwest to, I guess, Maryland is still technically the South, but, man, they just, you know, there are little subtle differences, but even between the states and the regions of the state. So, you know, it's just, you know, have a wide perspective on things.
Now, I noticed that when you went to Texas, it said that that's when you started playing football. Is that true? Did you play earlier on, or is that when you actually started playing, and then what led you to play football?
Oh, no. I started playing football when I was, like, 7 years old, when we were actually living in Japan. You know, when we first moved there, we were living off base because there's only a certain number of houses on base. Like, on-base housing is what it's called. And so you got to wait for somebody to move out, and then you move in, kind of thing. So, you know, we were living off base and then moved on base, and that's when I started playing football, simply because my oldest brother started playing football. And, like, you know, I'm three out of four, so, you know, he's, like, 5 years older than me. And so, you know, I don't know if all little brothers are like this, but everything my oldest brother did, I wanted to do as well. So he started playing football, so I was like, I want to play football. And, you know, played every season up until, you know, I didn't play anymore, you know, until I got done in college pretty much.
Now, did you walk on to Alabama, or did you get a scholarship?
Nah, I was on scholarship, but the way I got on scholarship was because somebody didn't qualify academically. So, like, 2 weeks before the season, before you had to report to camp or 2-a-days or whatever, they gave me a call, and I came on my visit because I was going to go to Ole Miss.
And okay.
They gave me a call and, you know, basically told me what had happened, and, you know, I signed on my visit. And then I went home and came back, you know, went home for, like, 2 days, packed my stuff, and then my mom dropped me off on the way to work on a Monday.
Wow.
Down to the airport.
Sounds like a good decision, though, right?
Yeah.
Best decision I made. And, you know, at the time, I was like, whatever. You know, I just – now, you know, I get to go play ball for free, and you know, that's what I wanted to do. So,
and well, know, anytime you can play for Nick Saban.
Well, Nick Saban wasn't even there. Shula was the coach. Mike Shula was okay. The coach at the time. So we it wasn't like what it is now. So yeah. You know, but that also makes me appreciate it so much more that, you know, they had just gotten off probation the year that I got there, you know, didn't really, you know, the first year I think we went 10-3, and then, you know, went, you know, 500 the next two seasons, and then, you know, they fired Shula and hired Nick Saban. Oh, like in the middle of the night, and you know, that's kind of when everything changed.
Now, how was it like to play for Nick Saban, and what was it like to win the national championship that year?
Man, you know, the thing that Nick Saban does the best, I think, is he creates an atmosphere of competition. So, you know, just because you're a true freshman, or just because you're a fifth year senior or whatever, it doesn't mean you're going to start. And it wasn't necessarily like that when Shula was there. So, man, now you have all these best players in the nation competing for a spot week in and week out. So how much better do you think that's going to raise everybody's level of play if every week that your job is in, you're competing for your spot, you know? So he really put the X's and O's, really did an awesome job of articulating the process, as you always hear him say. And, man, it's just something that, you know, I took from college and applied it to my life and even into fighting. And then, you know, here we are.
Now, is it true that you start to stay in contact with him and talk to him time from time?
Every now and again, you know, he's probably the busiest guy in America. If he's not coaching, he's recruiting. If he's not recruiting, he's game planning. You know, the guy, they get there at like 5, 6 in the morning and don't leave till like 11 o'clock at night. And they're in meetings, watching film, practice, you know. And when it's the off season, he's on the road recruiting. You know, the guy's 70 years old and has the energy of a 20-year-old. Like, how he's doing that and all that other good stuff. Man, you know, I hope that when I, you know, first of all, if I even make it to 70, that I have that same kind of energy and drive and determination and want to that he has even at 70 years old.
Me too.
Yeah. Now, what did you pick up from him in that year that he was head coach that just that you bring with you today?
Like I said, you know, he really broke down the process and what the process is. And, you know, that's how I approach the fight game and how I get ready for fights. You know, I have to do this. I have to do that. You know, I have to get up early. I got to do my strength and conditioning. Got to, you know, put out during practice. And, you know, even the off season, even when I'm not fighting, man, you still got to stay in some kind of shape. So, man, just, you know, his articulation of the, what the process is and how he implements it and how it carries over from football to, like, your everyday life, to the business world, to the classroom, to, you know, relationships. You know, it's just a totally invaluable information that he gives out like that.
I know once you won the national championship, you wound up signing with the Browns, to their practice squad. Then you went to the Canadian Football League, and then it says the Arena League. What made you make the decision to leave football and then go to MMA?
Man, you know, the writing was kind of on the wall when I was playing for that arena team. You know, there's not a whole lot of guys that go from arena to the NFL. You know, usually by the time you're at arena, it means you've already been to the NFL or you were never good enough to get to the NFL. So, man, I love football, but, you know, not that much. You know, it just wasn't fun, man. You know, you go from playing from a high-level program where all the players are disciplined, like, you know, other players hold them accountable for penalties and things like that, to almost making it to the NFL, to almost making it in the Canadian League, and now you're here, you know. So, you know, the thing that really disturbed me the most is like the lack of discipline that the other players have, you know. Yeah. I just didn't want to and couldn't be a part of it. And, you know, I already had a kid, and, you know, if it wasn't the NFL, then, you know, I just, you know, I didn't want to play anymore. Yeah.
Gotcha. Now, like, what led you to MMA? Was there somebody that was like, you should try this out, or you just randomly decide, let me try MMA?
You know, I wrestled a little bit in high school, so I started with jiu-jitsu, and then just kind of, you know, evolved and you know, just wanted to do more and more and more. Sparred for the first time, and that was it. I was hooked.
It seems like nowadays it seems like you're getting all these football players, I feel like, that are, if they don't make it or if they're retiring from the NFL sooner, they're going to MMA because a lot of them have that one thing. It's either they might wrestle on the side, and then all you really need to do after that is learn another background. What would you say your backgrounds are? Fighting wise,
I don't have a background in fighting. You know, I was just a tough son of a bitch who, you know, once I got a taste of that sparring, you know, I knew that, you know, this is what I wanted to do. This is what I was going to do. You know, unfortunately, I didn't make any NFL money, so I still had to work a job. So, man, it just meant that I had to get up early and go to sleep late, you know, kind of like Nick Saban did, you know, the process. You know, this is what you got to do so that eventually you can do what you want to do.
Okay. Now, before I pass it over to my buddy Jim, I just wanted to ask, how is it like to train with Henry Cejudo? Because I see that you've been training with them, or you were training with them for the fight against Darren Stewart.
Yeah, you know, anytime a guy who's won championships and not only multiple weight classes, but multiple sports, man, when he speaks, you listen, you know, and, you know, for me, you know, there's not a lot of athletes that can do and have done that can articulate how and the why. You know, there's a lot of guys who have a nasty double leg, but can't really necessarily tell you how to, you know, the when, the why, the how, you know, because they can just do. No one ever had to teach them these things. These are just like instincts that some of these guys are born with. And clearly he's got those instincts, because without instincts and being an athlete, you know, he's not going to be an Olympic champion. You know, he's not going to be a two-division champion. So, man, he's done a really good job articulating, you know, why you're doing what it is that you're doing. Because you see, like, a lot of guys, they try to, like, emulate Conor McGregor and Israel Adesanya, but they don't know what they're doing or why they're doing it. And that's why, you know, they don't have the success that these guys have. I mean, obviously they're not as good as them, but, man, if you're just out there moving and don't know why you're doing what you're doing, it's a good way to get clipped. It's a good way to get, you know, you're not going to be as effective if you don't know why you're doing what it is that you're doing. Absolutely. And to me, that was the best thing that he did, was this is why you do this. This is why you do that. This is when you do this, this is when you do that.
Nice. And you got any questions, Jim?
Yeah, I want to stick with fighting. In your career, you've been called up 5 times as a replacement, and you talked about kind of staying in shape on the off season. Are you somebody who stays in shape constantly, or is there like a specific weight that you just like to be at just in case your number's called?
Man, I really, the only thing that changes is my diet. Okay. I'm getting ready for a fight. You know, I'm a fat kid at heart. I'm a soda, beer, pizza, burger drinking, you know, kind of guy. So, you know, I tried, you know, just in November to take a short notice middleweight fight. Mm-hmm. Was out there on the island, and man, just had a really, really hard time making the weight, and actually got pulled from the fight. So I don't know if I can do short notice, you know, middleweight fights, but 205, I'm in there like swimwear.
Okay. Okay. What's like a natural weight that you walk around?
It varies, man. Anywhere between 220 and 230.
Okay. Did you have a chance to watch the fight back with Stewart?
Yeah, I've watched it a few times.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you, obviously since watching it, you heard DC and Bisping comment on how good you looked. Best shape of your life. You looked huge at 185. Do you attribute that to switching camps and going from Alabama to Arizona?
Yeah, 100%. You know, my strength and conditioning coach out there in Arizona is Chad EK. You know, this guy's trained at the Olympic Training Center. Used to get guys ready for the combine. He's had 2 kids of his own wrestle collegiately. So he understands what it is you need to physically prepare for a fight and a weight cut. And before him, you know, I thought, you know, I would run all the time, and I was running like 28, 30 miles a week and just killing myself, you know, trying to make weight. But he was like, nah, don't do that, because you're cutting into your muscle mass, and then you can't hold as much water, and then it makes it hard to cut, and yada, yada, yada. So, man, I probably ran 30 miles total this whole camp. Wow. You know, and so, you know, I was a little bit heavier showing up on fight week, which kind of like, you know, had me sweating a little bit. But, you know, I was just, you know, these guys have done it. Eddie Chaw, Santino DeFranco, you know, these guys have been there, done that, coached in championship fights, won championship fights, and have cornered, you know, thousands of fights. So, man, if, you know, they just told me, you know, just trust our process and the way we do things, and it's going to work out. And, man, it was the easiest weight cut I have. It's the freshest I've ever felt. You know, if you watch the fight, man, you can, and you watch any of my fights previous, man, I feel and look like a totally different human being. And, yeah, you know, before that fight, you know, I was really contemplating even fighting at middleweight anymore, just because I dreaded those weight cuts so bad.
But
it was so smooth and effortless, you know. Do this. I literally just did what they told me to do, and everything worked out perfectly.
Yeah. I mean, you had that fight in the bag. Honestly, I think it should have been stopped a little earlier when you had him on the ground. And I know it was a heat of the moment thing, not intentional with the knee. Do you think that rule should be kind of expanded or explored a little bit more? Because DC even said, like, he's been looking at that. And, you know, we saw it with Peter Yan and Aljamain that it happens.
This is the thing. I think when a fighter is playing the game, he's up, he's down, he's up, he's down, he's getting up, he's going back down. That's on him. And, you know, I'm not trying to pass blame. I'm not trying to, you know, say it's not my fault. I threw an illegal strike, got ruled no contest, came home with half my money, which to me is the biggest penalty you can pay is a financial penalty.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially in a fight that was I was winning as dominantly as I was winning. But I've always felt that if they're playing the game up, down, up, down, up, down, I'm up, I'm not down. You know, it's hard to see where they're at because, you know, I'm staring down, you know, at his back, in the back of his head. Can't really necessarily see where his knee, if his knee's up or down. And again, that's on me. But I think there's should be some gray area on the – it should be situational. Yeah. Peter Yan, like, there was no question that Aljamain Sterling was down. He was on all fours facing him. You know, I had the cage on the other side, you know, so it's, I think, a little bit different circumstance, but, you know, it is what it is. It's going to be a rule till it's not anymore.
Yeah, and you owned it immediately. So that, you know, it takes a lot to own it. And do you want the next fight to run it back with Aaron, or is it on to the next?
Whatever name comes across that contract, you know, if it's his name, if it's somebody else's name, if it's in a higher weight class, you know, it is what it is. Yeah. You know, I just signed on the line to get, you know, get prepared for the next guy.
Yeah. Do you see yourself fighting more at middleweight or light heavyweight?
Middleweight. Yeah. Just because, like, 205, like I said, I'm down for the short notice thing, but as you can see, like, when I have a full camp, it's you know, I feel great and look great.
Yeah, you're a monster. Do you want, like, are there dream opponents or, like, somebody that you see ahead of you in the ranking that you're like, I match up great with him, I want to take his number?
Man, I think I match up great with a lot of guys in the middleweight division. You know, some guys may be a little more skilled, a little more, a little faster or whatever, but, you know, I think that there's few guys as tough as me. And, you know, now that, you know, I think I found my home and at Fight Ready. You know, I think that I'm just going to be a totally different animal. I think I looked faster. I was in better shape. Really let my hands go. Combinations.
Yeah, they were crisp.
Takedowns. You know, I did the whole MMA game. You know, it wasn't just striking. It wasn't just wrestling. It was everything. Clinch work. You know, knees to, you know, legal knees.
Yeah, they were hitting them.
You know, I hit him with a little bit of everything. So I think that I'll just, you know, continue to grow and get better, you know, with the training with those guys. And I think the sky's the limit.
Okay. My last question is how soon do we see you in the cage again?
As soon as they pass that contract, you know, I'm healthy, no injuries. You know, he touched me one time, bloodied my nose, but actually just got back from the doctor. It's not broke or anything. So, you know, I'm good to go.
Nice. Awesome. I look forward to seeing you.
Now, with the main event of that card, how did you feel about the eye poke? And then do you think that they should be changing the gloves? Or do you think it was just like there's nothing really that you can do because of how it happened?
Yeah, I think that they do make gloves to kind of make your hands curve well in a resting position. And make it a little bit harder to extend and poke people in the eyes. But anytime you have open gloves and fingers exposed, I think there's risk for eye pokes and things like that. I do think that those two should run it back. You know, the fight was just getting going, getting started. And, you know, I certainly understand Leon's point of view and Muhammad's point of view. But, you know, we really didn't get to see nothing out of Leon Edwards. And,
yep.
You know, I think if he really wants to be a champion and fight top 10 guy, or, you know, fight for the belt, you know, it seems like Bilal Muhammad's the only guy accepting the challenge. So go on, you know, get you another fight, get you a win. And, you know, that puts him at 9 in a row. it would certainly be hard to deny him a title shot at that point.
Yeah, okay. The whole like MMA community has been like split with that, and some have said it's just a part of the game because, just like you said, the open gloves, it's going to happen eventually.
I mean, it is a part of the game, but when it stops the fight in the first round, man, the fight hasn't even really gotten going yet. You know, there are still four more rounds, and you know, anything could have happened. You know, so
yeah.
That's it. Run it
so
back.
So right before we get ready to go, I don't want to waste too much of your time. What are some of your hobbies that you do outside of MMA, just to keep your mind off of this so you don't have too much? Like, I know we're on your Instagram, we saw that you had got comics. Is that like comics for yourself or is that for your sons?
I'm into comics because my kids are into comics, you know. I read them as a kid, and a buddy of mine, Poppy Chulo out there in California, he owns a comic book shop, so he just sends me random comics from time to time, and you know, me and my kids will sit down, read them, and you know, talk about it, and just enjoy the time that we have. Especially, you know, I've been gone for 2 months, and so you know, everything that I do now, I'm gonna do with the kids and my wife and stuff. So you know, that's what we're doing is you know, reading comic books, watching movies, and eating real good.
Nice.
Is there any favorite movie that you've watched recently?
I think we're going to go check out that King Kong movie tonight. Okay. King Kong versus, you know, Godzilla or whatever, see how that goes. So
Are you going to be checking out the Snyder cut of Justice League?
Man, I heard it's 4 hours long, man. Yeah. I'm going to sit there for 4 hours. It's crazy.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it is.
Braveheart is about the longest movie that I can sit through. And it just so happens to be my favorite movie. And it's like 3.5 hours long. So
nice.
Anything longer than that, I know the movie's not going to be as good as Braveheart. So I'm not going to be able to do that.
Is there any comic that you and your kids like a lot? Like any favorite storyline?
I don't know about storyline. We just kind of read you know, like there's a lot of them, man. There's like Iron Man over there, Venom versus Carnage. Nice. So man, there's, you know, I don't think that they have a favorite one or anything like that. I think they just enjoy like the animation, and you know, they get to use like their own imagination within the comic book. You know, they can change the characters' voices, how they sound in their head, or you know, just little subtle things like that. So I think that they really enjoy the reading of the comic book and putting their own little spin on the plot and, you know, what's going on within the comic.
Cool.
Definitely so. But we would like to thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks,
it was nice of you to take time out of your day to do that. We want to thank you for that. And we want to wish you luck in the future. I feel like you're gonna be a big player in the middleweight division in no time. And I'm definitely going to be rooting for you.
Hey, appreciate it, man. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Yep. Roll Tide, man.
Yep.
Roll Tide, baby.
And for anybody that doesn't know, this is Eric Anders of UFC. You can follow him at ERYK Anders on Twitter. So definitely follow him and keep track of him. And we're going to look forward to seeing him fight as soon as possible. But that will wrap up today's special interview with Eric Anders. I am D Bake, and this is my host, co-host Jim. Everybody have a nice day.
See you. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
Thank you for watching this episode of Cage My IQ on the Sports Box. Please remember to follow us on all of our social media outlets. On Facebook at Sportsbox Show, Twitter at Sportsbox Show, Instagram at The Sportsbox Show. Find us on YouTube and join Outside the Box, our Facebook sports discussion group. The Sports Box is brought to you by our sponsor, Showcase Sports in Hamilton. Showcase Sports for the elite athlete. And also our friends over at CrowdPlay. Download the free CrowdPlay app today and use promo code THEBOX at sign up for 10 free points. Thank you for joining us.